The circuit that is shown in slide 17 is called the precision rectifier, and compared to the previous circuits that we have seen in the past, it exploits the possibility of using both the waveform of the sinusoidal signal that we applied to the load. In other words, both the positive and the negative phase of the sinusoidal signal is rectified, and in this sense, we could say that such a kind of rectifier is better in terms of energy sparing. As you can see from the picture, it features the presence of an operational amplifier and a couple of diodes that are connected to the positive input of the amplifier, while into the negative one we have a third diode whose direction is opposite with respect the direction of the other two diodes. The input signal that comes from the transducer is indicated with the letter E, and is provided to a sinusoidal circuit that is mirrored with another one with a transformation ratio 1:1, whose peculiarity is to have the central coil connected to the ground. This implies that the upper edge and the lower edge of the sinusoidal circuit in the right part of the circuit are opposite. In other words, if the signal provided by the transducer is 10 volts, for example, the two values of the two voltages, V1 and V2, that you can see in the picture, will be plus 5, minus 5. If E is equal, for example, to 3 volts, V1 will be equal to 1.5 volts, and V2 will be equal to minus 1.5 volts. Of course, I'm referring to the positive wave of the sinusoidal signal. Instead, in the negative wave, the signs of the two values will be reversed, so V1 will be minus 1.5 and V2 will be 1.5. Okay, this is very interesting because it allows to properly manage the two diodes D1 and D2 that will be in conduction in an alternative way. Looking at the circuit, in fact, the two diodes are obliged to be active because we see that we have a current generator IG that asks for current, and this current will be provided by D1 in the positive wave of the sinusoidal signal and by D2 in the negative wave of the positive signal. In fact, in the positive wave, V1 will be positive and V2 will be negative, so D1 will be polarized. Conversely, in the negative wave, V2 will be positive and V1 will be negative, and D2 will be polarized. So in both the waves of the signal applied to the sinusoidal circuit, we have the possibility of providing current to the generator IG, in one case through D1 and in another case through D2. Considering also the right part of the circuit, the same situation is present in the reaction of the operational amplifier. In this case, we have a current generator IG that asks for receiving a current, and this current can be provided by the diode D3 that is oriented in the right sense to provide such a current. And this means that the reaction of the amplifier is closed, So as we have the same voltages at the two inputs, plus and minus of the amplifier, and basically the reaction is very similar to buffer. So the U output of the signal is basically the same signal, the same value that we have at the positive input of the operational amplifier. Of course, we have to consider the voltage drop 0.7 at the extremities of the diode D3. Consider that for sake of simplicity and to make the picture more clear, I avoided to add the low pass part of the rectification at the circuit, but to achieve the overall task, the overall rectifier signal, we must add a resistor and a capacitor beyond the exit U of this circuit. Coming back to the circuit, we observe that looking at the positive wave into which V1 is positive and V2 is negative, the diode D1 will be active, so the plus input of the operational amplifier will feature the value V1 diminished by the voltage drop on the diode D1, that is, for example, minus 0.7. But we said that due to the short virtual circuit present at the two inputs of the operational amplifier, the same voltage will be present also in the minus input, and this means that the value of U in output will be V1 minus 0.7 plus 0.7, considering also the voltage drop of the diode D3. That is, the output U is equal to the voltage V1. In the negative wave of the original signal coming from the transducer, the two roles of V1 and V2 are reversed, that is, V2 is positive and V1 is negative. The diode active will be D2, and that positive input of the operational amplifier will be equal to V2 minus 0.7. Again, the similar voltage will be present as the negative input of the operational amplifier, and U will be equal to V2, since the voltage drop on the diode D3 is assumed equal to the voltage drop on the diode D2, but of course opposite in sign due to the different orientation of the two diodes. Clearly, we are making the hypothesis that the three diodes are equal. Probably we have a small difference into the voltage drops, but we neglect such a peculiarity, such an issue, considering it within the tolerance we apply to the measurement accuracy. What we said at the beginning, that is, this rectifier is very important in terms of complete usage of the power available, has been explained, has been shown, but by the description we made of the circuit activity. In fact, in the positive wave of the input signal, we have an output, And in the negative wave, we have an output as well. So all the energy provided by the transducer is used by this circuit, but direction of the rectification is only one, is the positive one. So such a kind of device is not used when it is necessary to understand the sign of the variation of the physical magnitude measured by the transducer. In other words, when we will have a sinusoidal waveform provided by the transducer that can be in phase or in counter phase with respect to the general power supply of the circuit itself. Further consideration must be done considering the instant of the time into which the transducer provides to the circuit a signal that is very close to 0 volts or even indeed 0 volts. In this case, the output of the rectifier features a small error, a small problem in terms of accuracy. This problem is well shown by the formula presented in the slide 17, into which we see that the value of the output U is given by one of the 2 volts present at the extremities of the secondary sinusoidal circuit, V1, that clearly is 0 in our hypothesis, considering the 2 voltage drops due to the presence of the 3 diodes D1, D2 and D3. I said 3 diodes because if before we considered at every time the activation of D1 in alternative to the activation of D2, while the diode D3 is considered always active, this time we have to take into account that both the diodes D1 and D2 are active, because at their anodes conditions are present that are in favor to their polarization. In this case, in fact, we are making the hypothesis that V1 is equal to V2 equal to 0. And this means that the current IG requested by the current generator can cross through D1 but also through D2. Clearly, this current will distributed in equal parts through D1 and D2, and we have to make the hypothesis that the current D1 is IG divided by 2, as the same will be the current across D2. But this has an effect onto the voltage drop that is shown in the formula. In fact, you see that the voltage drop in the diode D1, for example, will be eta time Vt, the natural logarithm of the ratio between the current crossing the diode and the inverse polarization current I0. So we write eta Vt natural logarithm of Ig divided by 2 time the current I0. This voltage drop will be not compensated by the drop on the diode D3, because in that diode the current crossing in this moment is the same as always, that is Ig. So the drop in this case is expressed by the term eta Vt natural logarithm Ig divided by I0. And clearly the difference between the two quantities is not zero, is a very small entity more or less equal to 20 millivolts. But clearly this is an error. This is an error because we provide a voltage from the transducer with zero value, and in output we have something that is different from zero. This is a critical issue of such a kind of circuit that clearly can be overcome by avoiding to present to the circuit zero value in input. For example, since we are talking about of a sinusoidal signal, we can establish that instead of oscillating around zero, the signal will be with another circuit brought to a continuum value equal, for example, 5 volts or 2 volts, in any case different from zero, and clearly the information will contained in the signal will be represented by the oscillation around this this value. In this case, the problem that we have described disappears, but clearly this requires a careful new organization of the electronic circuits, because we need a circuit located before the precision rectifier that shifts the voltage continuum value of the output of the transducer. And we have also to be careful that the maximum and the minimum voltages that we will have oscillating around that new value are in the range of the precision rectifier. A final remark must be made concerning the separation of the voltage provided by the transducer from the voltage provided by the second sinusoidal circuit and relative to the precision rectifier. Clearly, we need to have the two opposite values, V1 and V2, for the logic on which the circuit is based, and for achieving the alternative activation of the diode of the diode D1 and the diode D2. But it is also important to separate the voltages, the ground, and all the electronic issues related to the part of the circuit that generates the signal, that is the sensor and the transducer present in such a kind of electronic circuit, from the part that will be connected to the analog to digital converter, and then to the microprocessor that typically works in the TTL voltage range. And now let's come to the so-called synchronous rectifier shown in slide 18. That is very important and different compared to the previous one, because it exploits both the waves of the sinusoidal signal provided by the transducer, but also provides the so-called phase information that is very important when beyond the amplitude of the physical phenomenon that the sensor transforms into an electric signal. It is interesting also to determine the direction into which, toward which, the physical phenomenon is modifying itself. And the classic example that we well know is the one provided by the differential linear position transducer, into which we remember the presence of that ferromagnetic rod that goes up and down like a yo-yo, determining a coupling of the magnetic field provided by the primary sinusoidal circuit with one of the two solenoidal circuits of which the secondary part of the device of the transducer is made. And we remember that if the position of the ferromagnetic cylindric device was in the upper part of its range, the output signal is in phase with the power supply. Instead, if the ferromagnetic device is in the lower part, the output signal will be in opposition of phase with respect to the power supply, that in this case is the signal provided by an alternate power generator. So it is important to have also this information to establish, in this case, the right movement of the magnetic rod and, in general, the direction towards which the physical magnitude that is under measurement has been modified. In the picture, the part of the circuit that takes care of rectifying the signal is shown, while the part that performs the low pass filtering is not presented, since it is the same as in the other rectifying circuits. We have an operational amplifier with a negative reaction. The gain, just for sake of simplicity, is 1. VT is the signal that comes from the transducer, and R lowercase is another resistance whose value is considerably higher than those of the two R uppercase resistors, just to absorb the least possible signal coming from the transducer. We have a switch that connects one of the two extremities of the R lowercase resistor to the ground, and this switch is under the control of a comparator that compares the reference voltage, that is basically the power supply voltage of the transducer that we are using and whose signal is rectified, with the ground. Buref is the voltage that, again coming to the linear differential position transducer, was represented with the letter E, and in any case it is a sinusoidal waveform signal. Similarly, VT is a sinusoidal waveform signal whose amplitude will bring us the information relative to the amount of the variation of the physical magnitude we are considering, we are measuring, while the fact that it is in phase or not with VU reference will notify us the direction of the variation of such a physical magnitude. As we said, VREF is compared with the ground, so when we are in the positive wave of the signal, the exit of the comparator will be logically high, and if we consider a p-channel MOS acting like a switch, in that case we can say that the MOS is open, so no current will cross the R lowercase resistor. This means that the plus input of the operational amplifier will be at the same value as the other extremity of the resistor, that is VT, but since the two inputs of the operational amplifier are in a virtual short circuit. Even the minus input of the operational amplifier is at the same voltage value, Vt, so no current will cross the resistor R uppercase, and therefore no current will go into the reaction resistor R uppercase itself. This allows to conclude that the output of the circuit is equal to the input voltage Vt. When instead we are in the opposite wave, in the negative phase of the signal, the output of the comparator is logically low. This will close the switch, since the p-channel MOS is active when its gate is supplied with a low voltage, and this will connect the plus input of the operational amplifier to the ground. So the same will be the negative input, and the reaction that we'll have is a negative reaction, that is, the output voltage is the opposite of the input Vt1. Bringing these considerations into the analysis of the signal that comes from the transducer, we can take a look to the time diagrams that are shown in the right part of the slide 18. The first signal that we see is the reference voltage, the power supply of the transducer, while the next two diagrams show the two possible situations into which the signal of the transducer is in phase or in opposition of phase compared to the reference signal. Due to the logic that we have still described, when we are in the positive phase, the output is equal to the input. And when we are in the negative phase of the power supply signal, the output is the reverse signal that we have in input. We see that the two diagrams shown in slide 18, the two output diagrams, will present in the first case a sequence of waves positive, and in the second case a sequence of waves negative. The first sequence is due to the fact that the first one corresponds to a positive wave of the reference signal, and in that case the output is equal to the input, so the output is Vt if the transducer provides a in-phase signal with respect to power supply. The second wave instead is reversed with respect the Vt in-phase signal, since it happens during the negative phase of the power supply of the reference voltage. So in that case the output is the opposite as the input, and since the input is negative, the output will be positive. Clearly this situation is repeated in the next two waves, and from there on. The last time diagram shows the output of the circuit when the transducer provides a signal that is in opposition of phase with respect to the reference signal. Similar considerations can be done also in this case. The first wave basically corresponds to the same input signal, because we are in the positive wave of the reference signal. The second wave is negative, because the input is positive, but the reference signal is in the negative phase, so the output is the reverse. And we continue with the same philosophy for the remaining interval of time. So we have obtained, in the first case, a sequence of positive waves. In the second case, a sequence of negative waves. It is clear that if these two signals are given to a low-pass filter, where the time constant, the product of the resistor times the capacitor, is very higher with respect to the period of the input signal, this sequence will turn out in a very horizontal signal, basically with a very negligible ripple, that in the first case will be definitively positive, and in the second case will be definitively negative. So the amount, the amplitude of that signal will give us the amount of the variation of the physical magnitude we are measuring, while the fact that it is positive or it is negative will give us the direction toward which the physical magnitude changed. A similar situation is presented in slide 19, where the role of the comparator together the switch p-channel MOS is played by a diode bridge. In the circuit we have a couple of magnetic decoupling circuits that are performed through two solenoidal circuits with a transformation ratio 1:1. The first applied to the reference power supply, and the second applied to the E signal that represents in this picture the signal coming from the transducer. In the first decoupling magnetic circuit, again, we find that the secondary solenoidal circuit features its central point connected to the ground, just to have, as in the previous case of the precision rectifier, two opposite voltages at the extremities of the wire. In other words, if VREF is the power supply provided to the transducer and to the circuit itself, at the extremities of the secondary solenoidal circuit, we will have half the VREF signal in the upper extremity and minus half the VREF power signal in the lower extremities. Clearly, the real values of these two voltages depend on the phase of the VREF signal into which we are. If we are in the positive phase, the upper part will be positive and the lower part will be negative. If we are in the negative phase, the upper point will be negative and the lower point will be positive. It is important to specify such a thing because looking at the circuit we see that those two points are connected to the A and B points of the diode bridge, and depending on their signs we have two different diodes that are active in the specific phase of the power supply signal that we are considering. In fact, if A is positive and B is negative, clearly these conditions are suitable with the activation of diode 3 and diode 4. Instead, if A is negative and B is positive, we are in favorable conditions for the activation of diodes D1 and D2. Assuming that the voltage drop on the two active diodes is every time more or less equal, we can conclude that when the D3 and the D4 are active, V2, that is the right extreme of the diode bridge is close to 0 volts, while in the negative phase into which A is negative and B is positive, V1 will be close to 0. This is important because V1 and V2 are the two extremities of the solenoidal circuit, in the center of which the output signal U is taken. Consider that this solenoidal circuit reproduces the signal coming from the transducer, E, so the output will be E divided by 2, since it is taken in the half part, but with a sign that depends on the fact that V1 or V2 is equal to 0. If V1 is equal to 0, the right extremity of the solenoidal circuit in front to the E1 will be negative, so the output U will be equal to minus E divided by 2. Consider that this happens when the reference power supply signal is negative. Conversely, when the reference signal is positive, V2 will be equal to 0, and in this case U will be equal to E divided by 2. In other words, apart the division by 2, the output signal is equal to the transducer signal when we are in the positive wave of the reference signal, and it is negative with respect to the transducer provided signal when the reference signal is in the negative wave. These are exactly the same conditions that we had with the previous rectifying system in slide 18. So we can say that the same diagrams are valid also in this case, and the output signal, the U signal, in case of the transducer is in phase with the power supply voltage, is a sequence of positive waves, while in case of opposition of phase, the output will be a sequence of negative waves. Even in this case, we should complete the bridge of diodes with a low-pass filter, that is a resistor followed by a capacitor, and clearly the same considerations will apply also in this case, so the final output will be a continuum signal slightly oscillating, that is positive in case of transducer in phase with the power supply signal, and negative in case of the transducer is the transducer signal is in opposition of phase with respect to the power supply signal, and we know that this clearly depends on the direction of the variation of the physical magnitude we are measuring. This kind of circuit is quite more complicated than the previous one. We have two magnetic decoupling systems whose utility is, as always, to separate parts of electronic circuits supplied with different voltages from other parts that basically work in TTL voltage level signals. And this structure surely is not favorable to embedded applications because requires a certain level of space into which they can be assembled. Another issue on the other hand is related to the absence in this case of operational amplifiers, that are replaced by diodes and magnetic circuits. And clearly this allows to work in a range of frequencies that are considerably higher with respect to the previous solution. Consider also that the U signal must be taken in the center of the secondary solenoidal circuit, mirroring the E signal, and not in one of the two extremities, because otherwise in one of the two cases U would have been equal to zero. And to minimize the reduction in terms of voltage, the best point into which to take the output is clearly the center of that solenoidal sequence of coils. The circuit that is shown in slide 20 is devoted to the generation of ultrasound signals and to the acquisition of the echoes sent by the objects of which we want to measure, for example, the velocity or the position. We remember, in fact, that ultrasounds were employed in particular in fluximetry or in those situations into which we want to detect the level, for example, of a fluid or of water contained in a suitable container. The left part of the circuit is devoted to the generation of the ultrasound beam, while the right part is devoted to the acquisition of the echo signal. At the end of the circuit, we have to imagine a connection with an input port of a microprocessor. The first component that we meet in the circuit is a NMOS channel. Consider, in fact, that the generation of the ultrasound beam is made by exploiting, once more, the piezoelectric effect. In other words, we use particular materials that, when shot by a very high level voltage, will exert, will undergo a mechanical action that will make them to vibrate in such a way that a ultrasound beam is generated into the surrounding space. In the circuit, you see that we have a point named HV, that stands for high voltage, connected by means of a suitable resistor, a very high resistor, to the N-channel MOS and to the sensor, the vibrating sensor. The connection to the sensor is performed through the presence of a capacitor, whose role will be clear in a minute. When the MOS is not active, the resistor R1 is not crossed by any current, so the left extremity of the capacitor is at the same high voltage of the upper extremity of the resistor R1. Since a capacitor is a mirror in terms of voltage, I mean in terms of distribution of charge, the same voltage can be found in the right extremity of the capacitor, that is between the sensor and the resistors R3, R2. When a suitable command will activate the MOS, so as to bring it in saturation, the drain of the MOS will go more or less to the ground. This will cause a very high diminution of voltage at the left extremity of the capacitor that will be reflected in the right extremity too. And this will cause the so-called electrical shock given to the sensor that will turn out, will provoke, due to the piezoelectric effect, the vibration that will give origin to the ultrasound beam. if the shape of the sensor is carried out into a suitable way, we can also regulate, we can also tune the direction into which this beam is sent, so as to perform the function, the desired function. The voltage will come back to the high level, originally high level, when the command will be taken away from the gate of the MOS switch, so as to bring the situation as it was at the beginning, that is, to finish the stimulation, the generation of the eco beam. From the electrical point of view, the voltage that is generated at the extremities of the capacitor finds a way to discharge to the ground through the resistor R3 that is considerably lower than R2. So the relation between R3 and R2 could be, for example, equal to 1 with respect to 100, so as to absorb the most of the current generated by the high voltage point toward the ground across the resistor R3, while protecting the remaining part of the circuit by means of the resistor R2. Now, let's imagine to be in the reception phase. I mean, we are in the acquisition of the eco signals that are given back by the fluid that, for example, is moving into a certain section. And this eco will heat the sensor, causing once more electrical phenomenon that is detected by the resistor R2 and R3. So the voltage that the sensor will provide in part will discharge to the ground through R3, but in part will pass the resistor R2 and will go towards the amplifier. Clearly, we know that the input impedance of the amplifier is infinite, so we provide a way to this part of the voltage to discharge through the couple of diodes that are in opposition of phase that are connected to the ground. Consider that the need for the two opposite diodes is suggested by the nature, by the shape of the signal that is provided by the sensor. This signal is a signal of an oscillating object with a certain damping factor that is well represented into the picture of the slide 20. That is, we have very wide oscillation within a certain range that time after time will become more and more and more less till then they can be considered exhausted. Clearly, it is necessary to have oscillations that are greater than 0.7 minus 0.7 to activate the two diodes, and this short, basically, this make the length in time, the duration of the oscillation very short, since basically it cuts all those part of the signal that are lower of these two thresholds, that are, in other words, within the range that activate the two diodes. What it is important is that the remaining part of the signal is amplified by the amplifier. For example, the gain of the amplifier could be from 100 to 500 up to 1000, but clearly this is not so important, because the idea is to bring the signal to saturate. That is, the amplifier will provide in output the maximum positive or the maximum negative signal it can provide on the basis of its of voltage of its power supply, but this signal will be very, very well squared so as to be very well recognized by the port of the microprocessor and to provoke the generation of an interrupt that will allow the detection of the time into which the echo signal has been detected, has been reached, has been received. We remember that in the most of the cases, it is important to evaluate the interval of time between the generation of the ultrasound beam and the reception of the echo signal to establish the velocity or the distance into which we are interested. Clearly, a signal like the one that the sensor provides due to the reception of the echo, that is a signal that oscillates, is not the most suitable one for the port of the microprocessor, since the slope of the signal could be not, let's say, enough squared. And this can cause troubles to the electronic circuits of the input port of the microprocessor in the recognition of the interrupt condition. Instead, to transform such a kind of signal into a couple of oscillations instead of a long sequence of oscillations around a medium value, with a very square edge that immediately causes an interrupt request to the microprocessor is the best choice for the acquisition of the signal itself. Clearly, even the command that activates the MOS switch is sent from the microprocessor that can evaluate the instant of time into which the command is sent. It can also evaluate the small delay between the generation of the command and the real vibration of the sensor, because part of the signal that that shots the sensor arrives to the output of the circuit and then to the microprocessor itself through the resistor R2 and through the couple of diodes and the amplifier A. So the delay between the command of the micro and the real vibration of the sensor could be even estimated. And then we will have the echo phase into which the vibration of the sensor will be transformed into a signal that is managed so as to cause an interrupt request to the microprocessor, then at that time will read again a timer, so evaluating the interval of time between the beam and the echo. We have seen, on the other hand, a further application of the reversible piezoelectric signal, because when generating the ultrasound beam, we exerted an electronic action on the sensor, obtaining a mechanical effect, and then in the echo detection we received an electronic signal provoked by the mechanical solicitation of the echo signal onto the piezoelectric material itself.